Our message today is going to be by Brother Allen, and he's going to teach us the purpose of learning. So if you'll join me, welcome him.
Greetings, one and all. You know, we as Yahweh's people spend an awful lot of time learning, don't we? Came to the building this morning, and there was a brother knee-deep in concordances looking up something about pistachio trees. I don't know if we ever did find it in the scriptures, but there's always something to study. There's always something to learn. Yahweh's people are studiers. You go to the feast, you know, you see them everywhere, just studying here and studying there. We have an insatiable desire to know Yahweh. We listen to weekly messages. We have Bible studies. We read. We study at home. We read biblical literature. Listen to tapes. Study, study, study. By the way, I plan to have a message at this year's Feast of Tabernacles on maximizing your study of the Bible, and I hope maybe you'll find it beneficial. Have you ever stopped to wonder why all this learning? Why do we go through all this? What is the purpose? Unless you're a minister in training, what does this knowledge mean for you? How are you going to apply it? What's it going to do for you? Is it just nice to know, or is there a purpose in understanding Yahweh's Word? Well, the question was asked of me recently, what we should do with the knowledge that we've acquired. Hide it under a bushel, bury our talents, maybe keep it to ourselves, or go out on the sidewalk, go downtown and stand there and preach. Is it our obligation to walk into churches Sunday morning and argue with the ministers, as one brother used to do? What does Yahweh expect all of us to do with our knowledge and our biblical understanding? I would venture that most true worshipers have a better knowledge, a true knowledge of Yahweh's Word, better than most seminary graduates. They're locked into a certain program taught by their denomination, and they basically, that's as far as they go. For us, it's basically wide open. I mean, we want to study all aspects of Yahweh's Word, and we want to get into anything that Yahweh would have us do, because it's important that we learn everything we can about Him. It is knowledge and wisdom that has not been easily acquired for us. These are pearls of great price. One through effort, one through difficulty, one through trials, at the cost of friends, sometimes family. Just as Yahshua said it would be in Matthew chapter 13 and verse 44. He said it wasn't going to be something common. He said, again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto treasure hid in a field. Hid in a field. Interesting. Why would it be hid in a field? The which, when a man has found, he hides, and for joy, therefore, goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. He buys the whole works, if need be, because it's hid there, and he wants to find more. Again, he says, verse 45, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchantman seeking goodly pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. He bought it. Two instances, two different men. One who stumbles across the truth, and one who actively seeks it. Both deny themselves, and they pursue that truth, refusing everything else in life to get that pearl of price. They give it up for the prize of life eternal. Well, many examples we know are in the scriptures where the people that wanted to and did follow Yahweh lived their faith. They did what they knew, and they had to do nothing else. They knew that this was their destiny. And I guess that is the answer to the question, at least one answer, as to why all this learning, so that it can be a part of our lives, as it was with the patriarchs and prophets and the righteous kings. They lived it every day. And they did it without compromising. Well, they were human. Sure they were. And at times they slipped up. Abraham, Moses, David, Paul, they all had their sinful moments. But the redeeming quality of their life is that they were always headed The momentum was always in the right direction, always moving, inevitably, despite some occasional slips. They had pure hearts, and I think I always look at David, especially in that regard. They had pure hearts. They pursued Yahweh and His righteousness. And that quality, to maintain your integrity in the face of opposition, no matter what the world thinks, no matter what the world does, is in great demand today, because we're seeing less and less of that, aren't we? We live in a world of compromise. Big C, compromise. You want to characterize our world today. The progressives, they'd like us to reduce everything to the lowest common denominator, which means to them, no standards. Which means to them, no absolutes. No rules. Maybe you've seen decals on some cars. No rules. No fear. It's time to wear a healthy dose of fear in hearts today, because soon it'll be too late. And the fear that they will have is the fear of a returning Yahshua in wrath to judge this world. It's time to turn back to Yahweh. Today the trend is to throw out the rules in order to accommodate everyone. Change the system of the majority to accommodate all the rest. Celebrate diversity, which also means that your truth is as good as mine or anyone else's. No one has a lock on absolute standards, so you have no right to criticize me in my life. Compromise is ballyhooed as a virtue. It's diplomatic. It's reasonable. You know, think about it. That's the thinking of the world. On the other hand, those who hold to integrity and refuse to accept anything and everything that's going around are viewed in a kind of strange twist as cruel, difficult people, uncompromising, uncompassionate individuals. For some reason today, standing firm on principle and not tolerating behavior that's bad has come to be equated with having a lack of love. The culture has lost the dynamics of what love really means. As a Bible student, we know that Yahweh chastens those He loves. Correction is a big part of true love. In Hebrews chapter 12 and in verse 6, we find an explanation of discipline as well as the result of a lack of discipline. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 6. And this is starts in verse 6. For whom Elohim loves, He chastens and scourges every son whom He receives. If He loves him, He'll chasten him. Why? Why? Because love indicates a desire to protect and to help and to guide. If you endure chastening, Elohim deals with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chastens not? But if you be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are you bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily, for a few days, chastened us after their own pleasure. I remember as a child being a little ornery, and got a good thrashing. And I'll tell you what, the spirit changes real fast. It really does. I mean, it's almost like, am I going to live through this? You know, and then when you do, you're so happy you did, and you want to change. And that's what correction does. It says, but He, for our profit, that we might be partakers of His righteousness. That's why Yahweh corrects us. Now, no chastening for the present seems to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward, this is what I was talking about, and it's so true, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. A loving parent would never let his child run free down a busy highway. He would never let him play with explosives. And if he chastens his child, who's going to come and say, oh, you don't have love. Oh, you're a very mean person. Obviously not. Would anyone say that a parent who guards his child from potential harm lacks a love of that child? Of course not, just the opposite. Neglect is what shows a lack of love. Allowing everything and everything at all is what shows a lack of compassion. Who would say that a person who cares about stopping self-destructive behavior in anyone is showing a lack of love for that person? Well, no one would say that. That's insanity. Yet, the culture thinks that way because it's lost the standards. It doesn't have any standards. For the most part, that's the world. And it's lost what the scripture says is right and wrong behavior. Therefore, it doesn't understand the purpose of discipline, let alone how love works. Yahshua didn't teach the world standards. He taught his father's standards. Over in John chapter 8, he set up a definite pattern, code of behavior, and showed by his example how to live it. He's our example. Then said Yahshua unto them, when you have lifted up the when you have lifted up the Son of Man, then shall you know that I am He, and that I do nothing of myself, but as the Father has taught me, I speak these things. He taught what the Father taught. What did the Father teach? Well, flip back to Deuteronomy. Flip back to the Torah that we've been reading. That's what the Father taught, and Yahshua passed that on to us. And not just taught it, but lived it. And so when the Pharisees came along and says, oh, you've broken the Sabbath, or you've gone out through a field and picked a few grains, or you didn't wash your hands before you ate, you broke the law, and Yahshua explained, no, I didn't. And explained the right understanding of the law. His father's standards are not values of any man-made culture. Isaiah chapter 55 shows us that he has his judgment according to what? What is the ultimate authority that Yahweh goes by? Isaiah 55 and verse 8. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, says Yahweh. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. If he says it, we need to believe it, not come up with our own and say, well, man's ways are better. His laws are better. His way of thinking is better. Yahweh judges by absolutes that he himself created. He is the creator of all that is right and good. To say that absolutes don't exist is the ultimate insult to Yahweh himself, because he is the absolutes. But one of our duties for the privilege of learning Yahweh's word is to set an example for others. But you know, you can't do that if you're timid. If you're timid when it comes to the truth. We can't do that if you're afraid of what the world thinks. Why should we care what the world thinks as it continues down its path to oblivion? Our duty is to show the right way. But sadly, you know, too many are just that. They're just timid and they're just fearful. They clam up when they should stand up and be counted as a witness of what they know. Instead, they compromise their convictions or maintain them under the cover of darkness. If you're one of those faint-hearted believers, I invite you to take a lesson from a man with a backbone. We learn about him in the first chapter of Daniel. It introduces us to him as a young man. A young man in very interesting and strange circumstances. Babylonian King Nebuchadnezzar, following his first invasion of Judah and siege of Jerusalem, took hostages of dozens, no doubt, of Jewish youths who were probably in their teenage years. We read about it in verse 1 of Daniel chapter 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And Yahweh gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. Why? Because the man was not following Yahweh. And Yahweh does this, chastises when we go astray. And this man had done it over and over. The prophets had come to him and he wouldn't listen. Anyway, with a part of the vessels of the house of Elohim, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his deity. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. What a blasphemy to take the vessels of the tabernacle, of the temple, and honor a pagan mighty one with them. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes. So they took these men hostage. And this leader of this guard was told to bring them. Notice here, verse 4 is very fascinating. It says, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored, and skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge. They took the brightest and they took the best. And he wanted to enlist them into his service, the king did. And understanding science, and such as had ability in them, to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. Interesting, isn't it? You can take the qualifications of these young men and translate it to Yahweh's people and Yahweh's kingdom. He wants people without blemish, taint of sin. He wants people who have knowledge and wisdom of the word for his kingdom. Those who know the law and can administer it fairly. His law is going to be the constitution of the kingdom. Look over in Daniel chapter 7 and verse 27. And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Daniel and his friends were to receive privilege. Privileged instruction for privileged positions. So too, brethren, are we if we're Yahweh's people. Privileged instruction for privileged position one day in the kingdom, a kingdom of priests. We are in training for the position. It says in Revelation 5:10, much as Daniel and his friends were, and has made us unto our Elohim kings and priests, or kingdom, a kingdom of priests, and we shall reign on the earth. No wonder it takes so much effort. No wonder we have to go through so much, you know. It's very difficult. Any position of that high order is not going to be handed out freely. It's going to take those who are very qualified. And to be qualified for a good job takes a lot of training or a lot of education or both. Well, it wasn't captivity that tested Daniel's integrity. It was privilege. Think about it. Royal privilege, education, good food and drink. One of the most sought after jobs in the kingdom. Who could have a problem with that? Daniel could. The king had ordered Ashpenaz to teach them literature and the language of the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, mathematics, astronomy, natural history, agriculture, and architecture. They were to eat the king's food and drink the king's drink. And after 3 years, they were to have a guaranteed position in the king's personal service. Well, if we read the account, Daniel didn't have a problem with the education or the training program, and even the future in the king's court. I'm sure he wasn't thrilled to be named Belshazzar, which was a name that was after a Babylonian idol. But he did have a problem. He did draw the line where the scripture drew the line. Daniel would not eat the king's food or drink the king's drink. Why? It says under in verse 8, and Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now Yahweh had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. He became good friends, basically. But Daniel says, I won't. I won't eat your meat. I won't drink your wine. Why? Well, those enticing morsels and vintage wines, the perks of the king's service, had been, no doubt, ritually dedicated to Babylon's false gods. No doubt they included ham, shellfish, maybe snake. Who knows what they, you know, what they ate? Who knows what other slimy, slithery animals that these pagans were accustomed to? Besides, these people consumed animal blood as part of their ritual worship. They ate strangled meat. It's one of the reasons Yahweh says, do not eat anything that's been strangled. And Daniel would have none of it. He says, no, I won't do it. He knew the word. He knew the law. He understood the commandments. He understood about Yahweh's command of eating right food and drinking right drink. His decision was ultimately a decision about who he worshipped. That's what it all boiled down to. We must draw lines where Yahweh's word draws the line. If the truth opposes the world, its practices, or its customs, then we must align ourselves with the word, not the world. Some believers tend to waver and almost timidly offer explanations for their faith when they're pressed to do so. But that wasn't Daniel's approach. He approached it head on. He approached it with his conviction. He could have approached the issue a number of more passive ways, I guess. He could have thrown the king's food out the window when nobody was looking. He could have sneaked food from the kitchen. He could maybe have had a covert arrangement with the kitchen staff. Maybe he could have started a vegetable garden out back somewhere. But Daniel's method was to be upfront and direct. People, you know, respect conviction. They may not agree with you, but if you have convictions, they'll respect that. They really will. It says in verse 8 that he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. I wonder what they thought of that. I can't do it. I don't want to defile myself. I wonder what they thought, well, what am I doing? You know, what do you think of me? He was respectful, but he was unyielding. He wouldn't do it. That's courage and that's integrity, brethren. He was also teaching these Chaldeans by his own living example. A good example is worth 1,000 admonitions. You can talk all day to your children what to do and what not to do. You know what they're going to do? They're going to watch mommy and daddy, and what they do, they're going to do. Doesn't matter how many times you tell them don't do it. If mommy and daddy do it, they're not going to see anything wrong with it. Well, that works for adults too. People watch you. They're watching you all the time. You'd be surprised what they know about you just by watching you. Well, he was teaching these people by his own living example. A good example is worth many, many words. We teach mostly by our actions anyway, so people watch, and they evaluate, and they watch some more. Think about it. Here was Daniel and his friends in enemy territory, at the very nerve center of an empire that had just destroyed his homeland. And yet, we read in verse 9 that Yahweh brought Daniel into favor with the prince of the eunuchs. He proved the truth of Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 7. When a man's ways are pleasing to Yahweh, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. Don't compromise and forfeit Yahweh's protection. Stand firm in obedience, and then Yahweh will bless. Trust in him. He'll take care of you. Daniel did. Daniel did what was right, and he trusted Yahweh for the results. No matter what. I mean, it could have turned all sour. He still would have trusted in Yahweh. Yahweh made Daniel to look healthier than the other youths in 10 days, which is pretty amazing. Verse 15, And the end of the 10 days, that was what he said. He told the king, well, you let me eat my vegetables. You can eat the junk that you guys eat, you know, the whatever they were eating, the bad stuff. And he said, we'll see who looks and works better after only 10 days. Boy, who knows what they were eating, but so they did. At the end of the 10 days, verse 15, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat, his junk food. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink and gave them pulse. Interesting. So, what happened? Found out that it works to eat good food. It works to do it Yahweh's way. As for those four children, Yahweh gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. It didn't say all the boys had the same knowledge, as many people think you have to have with the Spirit, have that one gift that they all want to have. Not all of them had that, but Daniel did. He had the gift of prophecy, visions and dreams, which we know later on he used to his advantage. If it had turned out differently, Daniel would still have stood firm and looked to Yahweh for guidance. That's just the kind of man he was. When we look at many examples in scriptures, we see that the primary role of the man and woman of Yahweh is to learn the word in order to keep the word and pass it on to the next generation. All the rest of what we do basically is secondary. All the rest. So, our job is to get in the action. Be a teacher. The secret of teaching is that you must teach yourself what you are also teaching. And when you do, you learn it. You have to learn it. Because if you're going to teach it, you really have to know your stuff. That's why, you know, teachers have to go way beyond high school so they can teach in high school. They have to know more than the student. You have to know it in order to teach it. And believe me, if you're going to teach it, you will learn it. You have to. You force yourself. You're motivated to do it. When I was growing up, my dad was always coming home talking about some new truth that he had learned. He was a salesman. He worked all week on the road, drove thousands of miles a month, and he spent a lot of time in motels learning and studying Yahweh's word. And so he'd come home and he'd say, did you know this about the Bible? I just learned this. And half the time I was interested, half the time, well, that's interesting. But I didn't forget it. I remembered it later on. I thought, yeah, he was talking about that one time. And it helped. It stuck. And so I could build on that understanding. And that's the message that we find in Isaiah 28. We're all familiar with that. Isaiah 28, verse 10, an often quoted passage, telling us how knowledge is acquired. 28, verse 10. For precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, and there a little. In Hebrew, zav lazav, zav lazav. Kav lakav, kav lakav. Za'ir sham, za'ir sham. Some scholars believe Isaiah was being mocked as he was speaking by his people who refused to listen. Yahweh in verse 11 says, okay, if you want it that way, I'll speak to you through incomprehensible language, the alien languages of your enemies. And that's basically the meaning of this, the Assyrians. But we know that learning comes in small bites. In school, you don't get the whole load dumped on you at kindergarten. You couldn't handle it. I mean, your brain just couldn't assimilate all of the knowledge that you need. So you get a little bit here. And then you go home, you think about it, come back the next day, you get a little more, a little more, a little more. For 12 years, 12 plus years, you're doing this. Getting more understanding every day. Building upon what you've already known and learned. Remember that what you teach, you don't soon forget. If you just casually read the word, you're just going to eventually forget it. It's like a sieve. It just keeps draining out. You've got to keep putting it back in. But when you teach something, it becomes incorporated. It becomes, goes into that deeper secondary memory, imprinted on your brain. Memory has a lot to do with motivation. If you're motivated, you know, people say, how do I remember faces and names? You got to be motivated. You got to pay attention. You know, when you introduce somebody, you got to look at them, maybe repeat their name, maybe think about some characteristic of them, of their appearance that reminds you of somebody, make the link and all that. I mean, it takes a little effort, but you got to be motivated. You can't say, oh, yeah, hi, and then next minute, who's that? You know, memory has a lot to do with motivation. We got to be motivated. So if you're practicing, if you're doing this because you want to teach, you're going to be a lot more motivated. Husbands can do that, teach their wives. Wives, they can teach their children. You can learn some new truth and come home and share it. Now, if your spouse is an unbeliever, you might want to, you know, throw in something that doesn't directly apply to him or her, just so there's a little balance and they don't feel that you're being preached at. But you might even unload some things that apply to you. You can do the same thing at work, various ways. Comments you make, teach the people you work with to think a little bit differently than the norm. You got to teach your children. Children can teach their friends. You can write letters. You can email people. You can share your understanding in many ways. It doesn't have to be some great, profound, you know, wisdom or, you know, 20 pages of understanding. A little bit here, a little bit there. It helps. It all helps. It doesn't return unto you void, and that's the beauty of it. Everybody benefits. And you'll benefit just by what you'll remember. It won't return void. We need to pass the truth on to the next generation. It's the only hope we have. We live in a world that's coming apart at the seams, and the only thing that's going to stand solid as an anchor is Yahweh's truth. That's the ultimate truth, and that's the only thing that's going to stand in this world. And we need to be educated about it. We need to be educated in His ways ourselves, and that is why we're here today, why we're always studying and learning. We need to ask ourselves, am I actually learning something, or I'm just drifting along here, maybe impassively listening? Yahweh wants strong believers. The prophets, the patriarchs, they weren't wusses. They were people who really lived their faith. They spoke boldly, they lived deliberately, and they lived with conviction. Never forget, brethren, as Paul reminds us in Ephesians 6, that we're at war. We're in a war. I'm not talking about what's happening in the Middle East, although that's true too. But in chapter 6 and verse 10, he says, finally, my brethren, be strong in the Master and in the power of His might. Put on the whole armor of Elohim, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood. Ultimately, that's the core of all of it. We're wrestling against principalities, powers, rulers of the darkness of this world, spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of Elohim, that you may be able to stand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about with what? Truth. Number one, truth. We need to learn that. And then we have to have the breastplate of righteousness. We live that truth. And your feet shod with the preparation of the good news of peace. Above all, taking the shield of faith. The shield of faith. To fend off, you know, the attacks of the evil one. And wherewith you shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked, he says. So, having done that, we take the helmet of salvation, the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of Elohim. And then we're supposed to pray always, so that Yahweh gives us strength and watch over us, persevere. We're at war. It's a spiritual battle, and we're recruited by Yahweh when He calls us into His body. When you come to Yahshua, you pick up your armor and you take your position at the front line, don't you? There's no fighting occurring at the rear. All the fighting is up front. That's where the battle is taking place. No one back at base. You take your fair share of difficulty, just like all the other soldiers on the front line. Every believer in Yahweh makes a stand and engages in the battle. That's what it's all about. Each of us has to have preparation so that we can engage in this battle. It's not some cheap approach to salvation that asks that you come to Yahshua to have all your problems taken care of, all your wants met, as if you're worshiping your own self. You're not here for a life of prosperity, to live on easy street. It's not about you. It's about living for Yahweh. Neither did Yahshua promise to relieve you of all anxiety and trials. These things come automatically with the battle. Sometimes that's the only way we learn. Acts 14:22 says, through much tribulation, we enter the kingdom. It comes with the territory, brethren. Yahweh didn't come to relieve us of it. He came to teach us so that we could overcome it. And by that, we become strong. In Daniel chapter 12, verse 10, says, many shall be purified. How do you purify something? You ever watch metals purified? They throw it into a big vat and they heat it up thousands of degrees. And the stuff just melts and the junk floats to the top. And below that is purified metal. All the impurities are sifted out and scraped out. He says, and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. The wise shall understand. Yahshua said in John chapter 16, verse 33, he said, in the world you will have tribulation. He didn't say, now, hey, follow me, and everything will just go as smooth as silk. No, he didn't. He says, be of good cheer, I have overcome the world, follow in my footsteps. Not be of good cheer, you have abundant prosperity from now on. That's the message today, and that's a big lie. It's a heinous lie. He told us in Luke chapter 14, verse 25, that whoever does not bear his torture stake and come after me cannot be my disciple. We're in a conflict. We're fighting the forces of evil right now, and it's only going to get worse. War is nasty. Warfare is ugly. This is serious business. We're in a lifelong struggle with powerful satanic forces, and we need to be strong. We need the power of the Spirit. We need the knowledge that Yahweh gives us in His Word. We need to be rooted in that Word. The evil one attacks, and he attacks time and time and time again. He always knows when he can launch an offensive, when we're not ready, when we're, you know, maybe sidetracked, maybe we're not in study, maybe we're not prepared, maybe we've kind of slacked off a little bit. That's when he's going to hit us. Happens all the time. Remember when Yahshua was hit? Tempted three times? Why? Because he was weak. Not spiritually, physically. He had fasted 40 days and 40 nights. Here he comes. Here comes the old evil one. Make these stones bread. Jump down, have this angels save you. He attacks whenever he can. And he will. And we need Yahweh's Spirit to help us. He told the adversary what? When he was tempted, when he was attacked, went back to the Word. Always back to the Word. It is written, it is written, it is written. It is written. You say, well, I don't choose to fight. I just want to coast along riding the wave. I don't want to be part of an army or an organized effort. I don't want to be in the fight. Then if that's your attitude, you're just lying out there waiting to be shot. Yahshua said in Luke chapter 11, verse 23, that he who is not with him is against him. If you have no choice. And that's what we counsel people before baptism, hey, do you know what you're getting into? This is a lifelong commitment. It's a commitment that's going to take your every effort. It's not something that's part-time. You don't do it whenever you feel like it. You do it day in and day out, and you don't let up. He that is not with me is against me, Joshua said, and he that gathers not with me scatters. You're not pulling together, then you're doing the opposite, he says. Luke 11:23. He that does not join with him actually scatters, working at cross purposes to him. It's a full-time job. You know, a soldier isn't a soldier 8 hours a day. Then he says, oh, okay, I'm going home. Don't shoot me. I'm going home. He's a soldier all the time. A believer is a believer all the time. A soldier in active duty on the front lines can't be playing games. A seeker of truth better disentangle himself from the stuff of life that distracts him and occupies his time and renders him ineffective. Because our primary responsibility is to learn Yahweh's truth and then walk in it. A lot of people waste their time with a lot of things. A brother once asked me what my hobbies were. I said, hobbies? Sorry, I just don't have time for hobbies. I wish I did. It may be fun to spend evening after evening in some regular diversion, you know, something you enjoy. But for me, it's just not in the works. There's just too much work to be done. Too many people waste their time accomplishing nothing, frittering away their lives on senseless entertainment or trivialities. But you know, one day they're going to regret it because life just doesn't last that long. Believe me. It goes fast. And the older you get, the faster it goes. Standing before Joshua, the judge, they'll have to explain why they were not productive with their talents that he gave them. Paul said of himself in Acts 20, verse 19, and if you want to look at a man who really worked, this guy was tireless. I just can't believe him. I don't know, what did he eat? Blueberries every day? I mean, this guy really had the energy. I like blueberries, by the way, but you know, you'd have to have excellent health to continue on what he did. Just amazing. It was nonstop action. I get tired just watching him, I'm sure, if I could have seen him at work. Acts 20, verse 19, serving Yahweh with all humility of mind and with many tears and temptations which befell me by the lying and weight of the Jews, and how I kept back nothing that was profitable unto you, but have showed you and have taught you publicly and from house to house. Never gave up, constantly in the battle, here, there, everywhere, testifying both to the Jews and to the Greeks, repentance toward Elohim and faith toward our master Yahshua the Messiah. Tireless. And then in verse 24 he says, but none of these things move me, neither count I my life dear unto myself, so that I might finish my course with joy, and the ministry which I have received of the Master Yahshua to testify of the good news, the grace of Elohim. He says, I don't care about my life. My life isn't important. Just let me finish the ministry given me. That's the attitude Yahweh wants, brethren. That's what he's looking for. I want to be a faithful steward. He wants to hear that from your lips. I want to discharge my responsibility. And the greatest joy a soldier can hear from his commander-in-chief is, well done, good and faithful soldier. Turn to 2 Timothy chapter 2. Read about good soldiering. Therefore, endure hardness as a good soldier of Yahshua the Messiah. Endure it. Don't ask to be relieved of it. Strengthened by it. No man that wars entangles himself with the affairs of this life. Why? Because it's going to send you zipping off, spinning off into another direction, and you'll never get back to what you need to be doing. Don't get entangled with the things of this life that take away your time, your energy, that he may please him who has chosen him to be a soldier. Don't entangle yourself. As long as we're here, look over to verse 15. He says, study, which is the topic of this message, study to show yourself approved unto Elohim. So that's one of the key reasons we study, so that we're approved by Yahweh, so that He knows we're trying to learn of Him in all that we do. A workman that needs not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Understanding properly what the word says. Does it mean this or does it mean that? I don't know. Let's find out. Let's study. And we'll make Yahweh happy. That's what He wants. Not only do we study and learn so that others can be helped, we study for the approval of Yahweh. Yahweh is pleased to see us learn His word and making right explanations and decisions by it. But just as we avoid a life filled with trivialities, we've got to avoid certain pettiness in our study as well. Look at verse 16. But shun profane and vain babblings, for they will increase unto more unrighteousness. Profane and vain babblings. Don't get caught up in non-essential issues when you study the word. Get to the heart of it and let the peripherals to themselves. Focus on what's important. Get the message, get the meat of the word. That's what He wants us to do. Certain aspects of the word, I look at as like algebra. I was never very good in algebra. Got C's, sometimes D's. But you'll hardly use it in your life. You'll hardly use it. However, it is a part of a higher application of mathematics. And it reveals the power of what math can do. Not just add, subtract, multiply, and divide. And you will need it if you're going to take on a job requiring it, like engineering, maybe certain sciences, architecture, and some of these things. So you need to be prepared. You need to have some understanding of it. And that's why it's taught. Not everybody's going to need it. But you need to be well-versed so that at least you know how it works and why it is. Same with Yahweh's word. Everyone's given a gift. We're not all going to be doing the same thing. But we all have to study the whole word so we know. We study various esoteric passages and we wonder what they mean. We can't explain them exactly. We can't make any application with them. But they do make us stretch our minds, like algebra. Stretch our minds. And once a mind is stretched, it never goes back to its original dimensions, you know. They reveal certain aspects of Yahweh we otherwise wouldn't know. When Yahweh speaks to Job out of a whirlwind, we get images that we don't even understand. In chapter 42, verse 5, Job says, I've heard of you, but now I see you. Now it's clicking. Now that you explained who you are, now it's starting to make sense. And at the same time, he abhors himself. He sees himself in comparison to the awesome majesty of Yahweh, and he says, you know, I'm nothing. Here I thought, you know, he was a little bit of a self-righteous man, I guess. And now he realizes he's nothing. Pile of dirt, waiting to disappear and not be heard from again. Yahweh says, who is he that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered that I understood not things too wonderful for me which I knew not. Hear, I beseech you, and I will speak. I will demand of you and declare you unto me. I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you, he says. Therefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. This is Job speaking this. Wherefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. He didn't understand it all. He didn't know the fullness of Yahweh, but he did have a better grasp of who he was, certainly. And he says, I am a simpleton. I'm nothing. Think of the majesty of Yahweh. Just think of the power he's got to create one sun that could just obliterate us in a millisecond. And Yahweh's got millions and billions of them out there. all working according to His plan, His design. You know, the Scriptures operate on many different levels. We learn the same way. Sometimes we don't have every answer to every question. And that's okay. Nobody has all the answers to every question. Yahweh chooses not to reveal everything. That's just the way it is. If He wanted everybody to understand everything, He would have laid it out very simple in 3-4-letter words. But that's not the way He works. He chooses not to. We don't completely understand the sufferings of a righteous man like Job, or know who the Messiah is, or know when the day or the hour of Yahshua is coming, but we know enough to warn the world to change. See, there's a purpose to what we do know. Yahweh gives us gifts in order to assist brethren in multiple ways. Some have one gift, others have other gifts. Some have multiple gifts. Knowledge is a gift. My gift isn't for me. My gift is for you. Isn't it? Sure it is. A gift of teaching doesn't do me any good. It does you good, basically. Your various gifts do me good, and they do the body good as well. That's where these gifts are used. That's one reason we're part of an assembly, to share multiple gifts and talents, to help, to be there for the brethren, to learn, to be responsible to others, to learn how to love one another, to carry out our obligations that make a body work, to learn to take correction and guidance from others in authority, to be a light. All of these things are rolled up into what an assembly is all about. It's not just a collection of people that come together for an hour or two, eat and go home. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 8, we learn of a selection of gifts here. It says, "For to one is given by the Spirit the word of wisdom." Wisdom is knowledge applied. "To another, the word of knowledge by the same Spirit. To another, faith by the same Spirit. To another, gifts of healing by the same Spirit. Miracles, prophecy, discerning of spirits, speaking in languages, interpreting those languages." You can find similar lists in Ephesians 4, 7 to 13, and Romans 12, 6 to 8. In Ephesians 4, 12, it says these gifts are the perfecting of the saints. That's why He gives them. Not so that you can stand up and draw attention to yourself, as so many misunderstand. These gifts aren't for me. I don't count. It's not about me. It's for perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, and for the edifying of the body. Paul indicated that the gifts of the Spirit are equally valid, but not equally valuable. Their value is determined by their worth to the assembly. He used the analogy of the human body. All the members of the body have functions. We've got an ear, we've got a nose. An ear can't do the nose's job. The toe can't do a finger's job. Every member has a function. But some are more important to others, aren't they? You can get by without a finger. You can't get by without a head. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. I think I missed my... I want to go back here. 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 12. I want to read a selection here. I think that would be enlightening to us in this regard. And says in verse 12, "For as the body is one and has many members, all the members of that one body, being many, are still one body. So also is Messiah. For by one Spirit we were all immersed into one body, whether we be Jews or Gentiles, whether be bond or free, and have been all made to drink into one Spirit. For the body is not one member, but many. If the foot shall say, 'Because I'm not the hand, am I not of the body?'" People say, you know, "I wish I had that gift. I wish I could do that." Whatever your gift you have, it's essential. It's needed. We couldn't get around too well without a foot. We might hobble along on one foot, but it'd make life very difficult. Same with some of the other members of the body. If the verse 16, "If the ear shall say, 'Because I'm not the eye, I am not of the body. Is it therefore not of the body? Apparently he was going through a big discussion with these people that they were complaining maybe that they don't have certain gifts. And he's got to explain it to them. We're all important, every one of us. And every one of us is missed when we're not here. I'll tell you that much. Where's Joe? Well, I don't know. I don't see him today. Man, I got to call him. I miss him. How often do we hear that? Every part of the body is necessary and important. And it completes the body. You can get by with certain members, but they're all important. All believers serve a purpose. And together, they make the body fully functional. If you're outside the body, outside the assembly, you can't fulfill the function of the Spirit, the spiritual gifts. You can't do it. So you might as well go bury your talent and give it back to Yahshua when he comes back. Because, well, I don't like organized religion, some people say. And let him charge you with unprofitability, if you like it that way. So anyway, it's important, brethren, that the body work together. To learn of Yahweh and his ways of righteousness is one of the reasons we do study the Word, to learn of him. Another reason we study, I should say, is prepare for service in his coming kingdom by living what we learn now. Put it to practice. Share it. Show by example. Let others learn as well. And of course, that's another reason, to teach in many different ways. One time we sat and we tried to come up with different ways we could have an outreach. We came up with some pretty good ways, but it takes a lot of effort, you know. You got to stick with it. But there's all sorts of outlets that you can use to teach others in many different instances. And that's really part of becoming a profitable servant by the talents that are given us. And that leads us to the next one, to build the body of Messiah and help each other understand better the truths of Yahweh's word. If we put our understanding to work, we will be most richly blessed. And that is a noble goal each of us should be striving for. May Yahweh bless you.